Hi, this is Steve Roost, and you're listening to Health Tech Hour on UK Health Radio. Each week, we give you the best news, views, and interviews from the health technology world. From CEOs and founders to entrepreneurs and clinicians, the companies and people that are shaping the future face of healthcare. All on the world's number one talk health radio. Hello and welcome to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost. Each week we bring you the best news, views and interviews with the leaders, clinicians, founders, investors, doctors, need I go on, that are shaping the future face of healthcare in the UK and beyond. As regular listeners know, I am a CEO and founder of a health tech business myself called PocDoc, which is empowering individuals to get health screened for cardiovascular disease just using one of our test kits and a phone. So if you want to find out more about our Healthy Heart Check, we are across the nation in pharmacies, and you can also go to our website, which is pocdoc.co, as well as obviously working extensively with the NHS. Thank you very much, as ever, to PocDoc for the support of the show. Thank you also, as I always say at the top of the show, for listening. So thank you everyone that's listening live on UK Health Radio. We love this live platform. Thank you so much for tuning in. We get hundreds of thousands of people tuning in every week now, which is fantastic to see. But similarly, if you're listening on any of the podcast channels, Spotify, Apple, Amazon, Google, etc., it's great to have you here. Thanks for downloading the show. Thanks for liking the show. Remember to rate the show. We're currently 5-star rated across all platforms. So if you can, just take that extra 2 minutes to rate the show. It would be really appreciated. And thank you as well if you're watching this on YouTube, either the long form of the entire show, or if you're watching the clips that we put out on my Instagram channel, which is at Steve Roost. So that's all of the admin out of the way. Now, the last show we did, wow, what a reaction. So show 114, episode 114, even before we put the show out, I was getting yelled at verbally and in writing by a variety of different people about whether or not I should be doing the show in the first place. So for those of you that didn't listen, it was a show between my good friend Russell Hobson, who is a stage 4 pancreatic cancer patient, who 2 years ago was given 3 months to live, and a lady called Jane McDonald, who's quite a controversial figure and wrote a book about, which is titled How to Starve Cancer. Now, the kind of inflammatory nature of the show, we mitigated because we had Russell come on, who was a patient who'd been through multiple rounds of chemo and was in a drug trial. Jane herself has been through multiple rounds of chemo, radiotherapy, and had a surgery, hysterectomy, to address cervical cancer, I believe. So this definitely wasn't a show about juicing the cancer away, but it was an incredible show in terms of its emotional content, in terms of it hit really hard. And the response that we got was insane. So we've already had close to 500,000 streams of that show on its own across all the platforms, which is amazing. Now, so check it out on the podcasts, EP 114 with Jane McClelland and Russell Hobson. It's a great one. Now, we are breaking new ground again on today's show, episode 115. Which I think is episode 115. It's hard to keep track. Pretty sure it's 115. We are talking about gut health. We've never talked about gut health before, but we're talking specifically also about children's gut health and the prevention of things like eczema and allergies, and even potentially prevention of chronic diseases by addressing issues with the gut microbiome early in life. So my guest today is Nora Cavani. I hope I said that okay, who's the CEO and founder of Alba Health. Nora reversed her own severe eczema through dietary changes and is on a mission to prevent eczema and allergies in children and across the world, as well as preventing chronic diseases. The Alba Health has said it's the only business to have developed a gut microbiome test for children and uses the largest longitudinal data set in order to be able to do that, I think, or because of that. I'm not quite sure whether it's in order to or as a result of, but we'll get into that. And Nora, so and the other thing is that I mentioned this to Nora before we started the show. The timing for this is perfect because I just finished Chris Van Tulleken's book, which is Ultra Processed People. So it's great to have you on, Nora. How are you?
Thanks so much for having me, Steve. I'm great, and thanks to everyone who's listening.
Did I do okay with your name?
Yes, perfect.
Okay, great, perfect. So we're a broad church on the show. You know, there's lots of different types of people. We've got healthcare professionals, non-healthcare professionals, people interested in all kinds of different things. I'd like to just set the scene a little bit because there's a lot out there about gut health now, which is good in some ways, but it's also quite a crowded information space right now. So why don't we just start, if you wouldn't mind, really basically, what is the gut microbiome? Why does it matter so much? And then we can talk about all the wonderful things that Alba's doing.
Yes, definitely. So the gut microbiome is the collection of microbes that we have in our gut. We don't only have a gut microbiome, we also have a skin microbiome. We have a microbiome in different areas of our body, but the gut microbiome is very, very important. And it has different roles. It can help us digest food. It interacts with the immune system. It interacts with our metabolism, so it helps us extract energy from food. It also interacts with our brain. So it is broadly known that the gut microbiome is has an impact on health, and there has been associations with most diseases, actually. What is really important, and here the new message perhaps for many of the people that are listening, is that the gut microbiome seems to be even more important in the first years of life. So when a child is born, we believe that we're born sterile. And then there is a process of colonization. So from a sterile gut, the gut starts to be colonized with microbes. And what research points to is that which bacteria colonize first and in which order matter a lot.
And is this related? Is this related to, we're going to jump all over the place with this show, and I love those type of shows, but is this related to the issue of vaginal births versus cesarean sections, or is that separate?
Yes, so there are three big things that can impact the infant microbiome. One is the type of birth. So with C-section, we're born sterile, essentially. Through a vaginal birth, the child is exposed to the microbes from the mother during the birth. Then the second one is breastfeeding. Also, breastfeeding, the mother passes on a lot of things to the child. One of them is bacteria. And then a third one is antibiotics. We know that now a lot of births happen, for example, C-sections happen together with antibiotics, and antibiotics can wipe a microbiome. So those are three important factors.
What point in, world science, history of science, did people start to look at this? Or is this one of those things that sort of, way back when there's been some kind of like, everyone sort of, it's always, if you look back further enough before the sort of silly nonsense doctors in the medieval ages with the humours, it was just sort of known that this thing was true. Like, how far back does this, our sort of embedded knowledge go about this type
Yeah,
of science?
I think you're right. I mean, it's been really through history. So we know that Hippocrates used to say, you need to look at the gut to understand disease. So it's way back. So those observations have existed for a really long time. We started to look at the gut microbiome even 40 years ago and its effect on brain. And in the past 15 years, something really important happened because we started to have better tools to analyze the gut microbiome. And in the past few years, even more so. We used to look at the gut microbiome by cultivating organisms, and that's very difficult
You mean
because
like in one of those agar plates or something? Is that what you mean?
kind
Or
of, yeah, exactly. And the problem is that most of the microbes in our gut are anaerobic, so they exist in the absence of oxygen, so it's very hard to study them. But now we're using a different technique, which basically from poop we extract DNA, and we look at the DNA of bacteria, even if they're dead. So it's we can analyze, and so we do it through DNA sequencing, and the techniques that we have today are even better and cheaper than what we had 10 years ago. So Scientific publications have gone from a few hundreds 20 years ago to 20,000 last year.
Right.
Really, knowledge is exploding here.
And are these data sets that are able to be accessed far more cheaply through this DNA sequencing, are they proprietary to those research groups, or is there some kind of like genome project, equivalent with the microbiome sequencing?
That's a great question. So the barrier today is that usually universities leads this kind of study.
Right.
Then, because of GDPR in Europe and other data protection laws, the data on the microbiome can be published, but not the annotation that comes with it. So the annotation of whether those people were healthy or which disease they had or
Oh,
which
interesting.
diet they had. So that's the challenge we have today. And that's why at Alba Health we have our own proprietary data set because we wanted that annotation.
Isn't that annotation like pretty critical? Because you want to
Yes,
try and like
exactly.
associate one thing with the other.
Exactly. So we're the first and only company that has this annotated, deeply annotated data set in children and also longitudinal, so following people over time. That's the other problem that a lot of studies look at the gut microbiome, but it's very hard, especially for adults, to understand what a healthy microbiome is because you don't know if that person is really healthy, if they will develop a disease in 6 months from now, right? So when you have longitudinal studies, you know the microbiome at some point, and then you know whether they become healthy or not healthy over time.
And how much over any given period? Let's take the longitudinal. How long is your longitudinal? Did you say, was it 10 years? I can't remember what I read. Was it some roughly?
No, so we started out with a research collaboration with a study in Finland that followed children from birth basically and for 6 years, and they will go up to 15 years.
Okay.
We also have another collaboration with another very long longitudinal study, and ours focuses on the first 2 years of life.
Okay. And how in those years, whether 0 to 2, 0 to 6, how much, and I'm not sure if you can explain this in a way like that me as a muggle can, I don't know if you know the phrase muggle, it's from Harry Potter about the non-wizarding folk. I don't know if I can understand it, but like how much variation is there in a child's gut microbiome between 0 and 2 or 0 and 6?
It's very, very different, especially in the 0 to 6 months of age. The gut microbiome looks completely different from a 6 to 12 months or 12 to 18 months. And that's because the diet is different, right? 0 to 6 months, a baby is either breastfed or formula fed, and then later they start eating food.
Okay.
So that food feeds different bacteria. So what the microbiome looks very different, and what's good and what's bad is very different in those ages.
And how clear is it as to what's a quote healthy microbiome and not a healthy microbiome? Is it objective at this point, or is there still some gray area in the middle?
That's why I find the infant microbiome very interesting. When I started to look into this field, I realized that for adults, it's still very, first of all, the microbiome is very complex.
Right.
The number of bacteria is very high, and there's a lot of variability between people. When you go to infants, the microbiome is simpler, there's less bacteria, and it's more similar even across different areas in the world. And there's a few concepts that are consensus and accepted. That's what I found interesting because, a lot of people say we don't know anything about the gut microbiome. I don't agree with that. That's not factually true. We don't know everything for sure. We don't know everything. But there's a few things that we know. If I have to simplify, there's three things we know about the gut microbiome, especially in children. One is diversity. Microbial diversity is very important. We know that after they start to eat solid foods, it needs to be high,
Right.
but before it should be actually low. And actually, it seems that there is like a curve of how the microbiome progresses from birth until 3 years old. And that curve, it's associated to health. If it's too fast or too slow, it can be associated to chronic diseases.
Is that right?
Yeah, so that has been
Wow.
That has been published in many different publications. Actually, my co-founder published a paper in Nature Communications in 2024 showing that a gut microbiome test in infants can predict health later in life, including,
What type of health can it predict?
for example, allergy risk.
Okay. And is at the core of ALBA, isn't it? Or
Yes.
your journey and your mission.
Exactly. So what's interesting about the infant gut microbiome is that it seems like it's not only important for the here and now of the baby, but also it's associated to health later in life. It has
Yeah.
consequences later in life. And so it's allergy risk, but it's also growth and development. It's also recurring cough and colds. So it's a lot about the immune system. And it's also excessive crying. Many experience colic in
Okay.
babies. So there's many associations there. So one is diversity and this progression of the gut microbiome. The second one is that we know that there's, without getting too much into details, there are some bacteria that seem to be very beneficial and to train the immune system. There's a window of time where the immune system is developed and is trained, and these bacteria mediate that immune system development.
Wow.
So, having those bacteria is associated to lower inflammation, lower rates of allergy and other immunological diseases, while not having those bacteria is associated to a higher risk of allergy. So that is actually quite consensus. If you talk to experts in this area, that is a consensus kind of topic. And then the third one is that there are some bacteria that we call pathobionts. There are some pathogens. It means it's bacteria that can cause disease and symptoms. But there are some bacteria that we call pathobionts. That means that they can be present and it can be okay. But if there are too many, if they take over the balance of the gut microbiome, they are associated to symptoms and for example, gut-related symptoms. A lot of babies have problems with their gut. So those are concepts that are consensus and well understood. And at Alba Health, we try to bring these concepts where there is a lot of evidence and a lot of research about, we try to bring these concepts to parents and to people.
And then we'll get into, because we're going to go, we'll stop for a commercial break in a second, but in a couple of minutes, and we can get into your journey, because you obviously had a very personal journey into this. But just to pick up on a couple of things that you said there, the everything that you said there sounds like it's sort of accepted, give or take, without me having gone and verified the papers and things like that, obviously. But is there really any counter argument at this point around this? Because it seems to be so widely accepted now, but is there really anyone that's sort of like, nah, I'm not so sure at this point?
So there's also another concept because we're not just about the gut microbiome, but also in general about diet. I think the concept that diet is very important in the first years of life is
Yeah.
accepted and promoted also by governments. You can go to the NHS website and look for the first 1,000 days of life. It is well understood that diet in these years matters. For example, there's been a lot of articles lately showing that consuming sugar in the first 2 years of life is associated to obesity and diabetes later in life.
Right.
So it is well understood by governments and promoted that, having a good diet in these years is very, very important. About the gut microbiome, I think that one argument that people make is we don't know if changing the microbiome will result in a lower disease risk. That's the biggest question mark. We know that
Right.
it is important for well-being,
Yeah.
so that is well accepted. But we don't know yet if that if we cannot promise yet that that will reverse a disease or will prevent a disease. We know we can say that it mitigates some risks and there's associations.
Right.
So it's a bit like saying, I have an Oura ring and I monitor my sleep.
Right.
It is understood that sleep is important for your health, but it's not like Oura will tell you, you're preventing a heart attack in some years.
Sure.
So it's the same concept. It's about buying into this association and the importance of it and understanding that it's not a hard promise for kind of the disease prevention, but it's a healthy lifestyle.
Yet. I would say yet.
Yes.
Let's see what happens. Right. My producer is waving at me so that we need to go for our first commercial break. We'll be back in 2 minutes. And then Nora, I want to go back to like your journey and the origins of Alba and your journey, and then we can pick that up. And then we can see where the conversation takes us. So this is the end of the first part of this week's Health Tech Hour with myself, Steve Roost, and my guest today, Nora Cavani, the CEO and founder of Alba Health. We'll be right back. Hello, and welcome back to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost, and my guest this week, Nora Cavani, the CEO and founder of Alba. So as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I've gotten really interested in this area of gut health because I just finished Chris Van Tulleken's book. So it's not, it's taken me a while to get into it, I guess, but here I am. So, but Nora, what was your journey like into this space? Because you've been doing it in a variety of different ways for a while, even prior to obviously founding Nora. So give us the origins, give us the journey.
So I've always been really, really passionate about health and science. I think I discovered what the DNA is when I was 11 years old. I was so fascinated by it, and I actually studied biotechnology and molecular biology because of that. So I've always been interested in this, and I started having eczema in my 20s. I always had allergies. I grew up with pollen allergy. I had asthma when I was a kid, and then I started to have eczema in my 20s. It's an inflammatory disease of the skin. Maybe many are familiar with that. And so since I started to have this, I started to experiment a bit with my lifestyle. I started to make my own products for the skin. I have a degree in pharmaceutical engineering, so I was really
Okay, it kind of helps.
familiar. Yeah, I think it helps. I wrote my master thesis on it, so I was very, very interested in this space. But then, and after that, I became a management consultant, and I think my lifestyle became quite bad, I have to say.
Okay.
I was working long hours. I was eating out a lot. I was very stressed, not sleeping very well. And at some point, when I was 27, 28 years old, I started to have severe eczema, basically on my entire body.
Oh, wow.
So that was terrible. My entire the skin on my entire body was like a wound. It was bleeding, it was cracking. It's terrible. It really affects your life so much. Unfortunately, there's no cure to it. You go to the doctor, they tell you need to apply cortisone, and you need to live like that for the rest of your life. And that was critical moment in my life because I understood I'm still very young and I need to live in this way, and I'm very restricted in what I can wear, what activities I can do. This started to impact my work. I had to go and reduce capacity and took a different role, so my career was kind of had to slow down. It affected my relationship with my partner. I started actually going into therapy because of that. So it was very, very difficult. And I asked myself, okay, what can I do? And I started to look for solutions. I went back to my biotechnology background. I started to read publications. I read hundreds of scientific articles about this. I started to reach out to doctors, to scientists, and I started to really change my diet and lifestyle. That actually reversed all of my symptoms, so I don't have that anymore.
What were the key changes that you made?
The first one was finding out about food allergies. Not many people know that. Sure, you can test for food allergies, but not all of them will show up from a blood test. There's two types of allergies: IgE mediated and non-IgE mediated. That was the thing that really changed everything from the beginning, like doing an elimination diet and finding out about these food allergies. But then I tested my gut microbiome, and I had very low diversity, and that is associated to eczema and other conditions. So I thought, okay, that could be also a potential problem. I realized, I think back then I thought I was very healthy and I was eating in a good way, but actually I was not. The only thing is that I was normal, but the thing is that normal nowadays doesn't necessarily is not necessarily healthy.
Right.
So I started to eat a lot more fiber, a lot of my diverse fiber. I stopped processed food. I reduce a lot sugar. I started to make all of my meals. So I changed completely the way I eat.
Okay.
And then I started to exercise more, working on sleep. So I went really 360 degrees. I've tried a lot of tests, a lot of health tests. I've tried most of the kind of wellness and health interventions that you can take. And right now I can say that I don't have any flares. I haven't had any flares for 2 years. I don't take any medications. However, I'm still a very sensitive person, and I know I'm allergic to wheat. I'm Italian, it's
Yeah,
very
that's difficult, right? How does do they even know what that is? Like, do they what do they do? They leave what do they what happens?
No, actually it's extremely common in
Is
Italy
it?
to have celiac disease or wheat allergy. It's very common, and it's becoming more and more common. So you can get a lot of alternatives, but I think my parents didn't understand it at the very
Right.
beginning. And I think that's very true in many areas of the world now. When you say you have an allergy, as a lot of people say, don't understand or say, oh, it's just that you're picky or something. And I realized that there are so many people out there in Facebook groups trying to find solutions, trying everything, spending a lot of money, trying to reverse their conditions. And that for me was a wake-up call, because I've always worked in healthcare, and I thought, wait a minute, our healthcare industry, there's not many companies that are trying to prevent diseases and stop diseases. There's a lot of products out there that are monetizing a bit chronic diseases, right? Like the creams that I was putting on my skin, and you're supposed to put for the rest of your life. So I wanted to do something that I thought I started thinking, is there a way that we can stop and prevent allergies and eczema? When did that start in me? There must have been a moment in me where this happened.
Is that because, just to jump in there, is that because the babies are born sterile, i.e. they're not born with allergies, or is that a different thing, a different offshoot? Are some people born with allergies before all of this microbiome develops?
It's still a bit of a question mark, but it seems that we build our immune system in the first 1,000 days of life. It even starts from pregnancy. So actually, what happens during pregnancy affects the baby, and then when they are born, the immune system gets trained, and the microbes have a role in that. So that's how I got to this concept: the first 1,000 days of life, diet. Diet, gut health have an impact in this. And there are some things that we know. And I thought, okay, then my mission must be to bring this knowledge to people and to give them the tools to learn about this and to do something about it. And right now we do it for more general well-being, but I really believe that one day we'll be able to say these interventions can reduce the risk and prevent eczema and allergies. That's our mission.
That would be incredible. So the reason that you focused on children in the first 1,000 days is because your belief was that's how to prevent it from happening in the first place.
Yes, exactly. And it's not only my idea. The thing that really surprised me is that there are entire conferences on the infant and maternal gut microbiome. So this concept has been around for many, many years. There's entire conferences going on this, with the hypothesis that we might be able to prevent chronic diseases, not only eczema and allergies, but also obesity, diabetes, potentially autoimmune diseases as well. So it's a quite acknowledged kind of hypothesis.
And how come, though, it's sort of Alba's the first company that's really sort of, I guess, used this longitudinal data or developed this longitudinal data to do something? And actually, what is it that you, what is your intervention and what does it actually do?
Yeah, I mean, the reason is probably because it's very expensive to do these kind of trials and studies, and because it's quite difficult to have the expertise. So my co-founder has 800 publications on the gut microbiome. He is one of those. It's quite a lot, and
Quite a lot.
He's one of those scientists that discovered that you and I have a different microbiome and it has an effect on health back in 98. So he's one of the pioneers really in this
Okay.
area. And he had this big study in Finland. He worked on that for 10, 15 years. So I think having that knowledge is critical to design a study like ours. So it's not many teams that get to do that and to have the resources to carry out a study like that. So that's why. And then you asked me about the interventions. And this is where this is another important concept. So probiotics can help some of them, not all of them. Some of them have studies that show benefits, but diet is even more important. And we always say you cannot just take a pill and take a probiotic and expect that that will do miracles. You also need to align your diet or your child's diet with that. Not only diet, it's also about environment. Basically, imagine it like this. You have the gut of a child that is basically sterile at birth. There are all of these microbes that are colonizers and come over time. You want to aid that colonization. So you want those microbes, good microbes, to come in and to be fed so they stay and they colonize the gut over time. And that's important even beyond the first years of life. It's important for older children, but even for adults, it seems that we're losing diversity in our gut through the generations, right? Because we use a lot of antibiotics, we use processed food, we live in clean environments, so we're not in nature as we used to be before. So it seems that we're losing biodiversity in our gut. And what I try to do, for example, also in my daily life, is try to aid that repopulation, you could say, or try to get those microbes in. So it's important for all ages.
What type of things get the microbiomes back in? What are the good things to reap to populate the diversity?
Yeah, if I have to like boil it down to some simple principles, the first one is fiber seems to be very beneficial for the gut microbiome. So eating a lot of fiber and diversity of fiber, so many types of fiber, is important. So what is fiber? Vegetables, fruit, legumes, herbs and spices, nuts and seeds, everything that comes from a plant, pretty much.
Okay.
So some say you should aim as an adult, you should aim for 30 different sources of fiber per week.
Okay.
So, and this is, I think, very eye-opening, right? Because when I
Yeah.
talk about this, I say a lot of fiber, people are like, oh yeah, I eat vegetables, but how many? Count them. How
Yeah.
many vegetables do you eat in a week? A lot of people get to 8, 10. But if you start thinking about 30, you can see most people are very far from that. So that's
Yeah.
the first thing. Then the second thing is try to reduce ultra-processed food. You just read a book, so you
Yep.
know a lot about it. And ultra-processed food, first of all, has a lot of additives, but also it is replacing calories that we could get from fiber.
Okay.
So that's also very important. The third one is to try to reduce sugar. Sugar also affects the gut microbiome. It, not only that, as you know, it also affects kind of, it can create these glucose spikes in our blood. So that's another important principle. And then the fourth one is try to incorporate fermented foods. A lot of people,
Fermented foods. I love
yeah,
fermented foods.
fermented foods, sauerkraut, yogurt is an easy one. Kefir has even more bacteria than yogurt. Tempeh, kimchi, sourdough,
Right.
anything that has bacteria can really help. So I think those are like the biggest things. And then actually the fifth one is to try to stay away from medication, not only antibiotics if not needed, right? Of course,
Yeah.
if you need them, you need them. Antibiotics have a pretty big effect on the gut microbiome. Sometimes you need them, they can be life-saving. You know, you have
Sure.
surgery or something like that, you'll need them. They affect the gut microbiome. Broad spectrum antibiotics affect the microbiome even more because they're broad spectrum, so they affect most bacteria. There are some that are more targeted, and those damage the microbiome less, and they go targeted to kind of the bad bacteria that we need to kill. So
Okay.
antibiotics have an effect, but not only antibiotics, even paracetamol, ibuprofen, other medication has an effect. The thing is that the way we evaluate our pharmaceuticals through clinical trials, there's no requirement to look at the safety on the microbiome, right? Because
No, I mean, I can't imagine that would ever. I can't.
exactly. So we haven't evaluated the safety on the microbiome, and we have some observations that there's an effect, a negative effect on it. So if you don't need the medications, better to
Don't
avoid
take them.
them. In general, also because as a simple principle, there's always side effects of medications. So
Makes
that's
sense.
important. So those are the kind of five things about the diet and what we ingest. But of course, sleep is very important for the microbiome. Stress can affect negatively the microbiome, and exercise is good for it. So it's back to the general recommendations.
So, and so I've got a couple of questions, and we're going to go into the last part. But so, when you talk about the microbiome, it's almost like it sounds to me like you it's almost you're, you kind of it feels like you're talking about an organism in and of itself, like a like that almost has some sort of superstructure or infrastructure or sort of cohesion. Is that like correct, or is that sort of I don't know. It sounds like it's almost like an organ.
Or even you could see ourselves as super organisms that are made by our own cells and these microbes. So they're not just living on us, they are us. They're
Yeah, they
part,
are us.
right? Because we cannot live without them. We need them to be healthy. We cannot be without. But yes, some even describe it as an organ. I like to also describe it sometimes, like imagine it as a forest, right? I think one thing that a lot of people struggle to understand about the microbiome, they're like, oh, I miss this bacteria. How can I insert that type of bacterium again? It doesn't work like that. It's not just about some specific microbes that you need to add or remove. It's like its own ecosystem. So it's also about the balance and equilibrium of that ecosystem. If some type of bacteria go down, others can go up. So it's also there's also effects
So
on each other.
how many in a healthy microbiome, how many different types of bacteria should there be present, roughly? Like I don't really understand whether it's like millions, thousands, hundreds, ten. Like what are we kind of talking about? Not like different types, not like the overall
A
number of,
number.
yeah.
Because numbers, trillions, I think types, it differs because it depends whether you're looking at the species, like what taxonomy level. I think when we look at diversity, there's two types of things we're looking at is the number of bacteria, but also how evenly they are spread. Because if you have, for example, thousands of bacteria detected, but one type of bacteria take up 70% of the microbiome, that's
That's
also not
not diverse either.
exactly. So it's both things. And it really also depends on the age. So it's always also relative to age.
Okay, well, we're going to go for our final break. And then when we come back, I want to really dig into how Albert is helping children because I know that you've got some fantastic reviews on Trustpilot. You've got really, there's a lot of buzz about the company and the technology and the approach. So I really want to try and understand on like a patient level, if you like, what's going on. We will be back with the last part of this week's show with my guest, Nora Cavani, the CEO and founder or co-founder of Alba Health. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Hello and welcome back to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost. My guest today is Nora Cavani, who is the CEO and co-founder of Alba Health. So I would love to dig into now, Nora, into almost like the patient side of what Alba's doing. So if I'm a child or the parent of a child, what happens right now? What do you do?
Yes, and so we have two offerings. One is more aimed to well-being, so really helping parents know what to feed their child for the best start in life and for good well-being. And then we have a more medical offering as well that involves a doctor. So what happens is that if you order Alba, you receive a kit at home. And we need a sample from you or from the child. And that's a poop sample. So there's a tube, it's very easy to take. You send it back to us. And then what we do in the background is that we extract DNA from the poop sample, That's the microbial DNA, so not the person's DNA. We sequence that, and based on that, we will know which bacteria are there. And then we compare it to our database, so our longitudinal study. We compare it to healthy children that have been healthy over time. And then we give you a report that has results on these key concepts on the gut microbiome. So you will learn a lot about your child's gut microbiome, how they compare to a healthy reference, and also what that means, right? So what is known based on science with all the appropriate references. And then we give also an action plan. What can you do to take care of your child's gut microbiome? So that involves diet, potentially probiotics, not for everyone, but we also give recommendations on probiotics. We don't sell our own probiotics and we don't make money out of probiotics because we want to give unbiased support and
Makes sense.
advice. And then also environmental factors and behavioral factors. We also give example recipes. And then after that, there is a call with a certified nutrition and health coach specialized in pediatrics. So they really help the parents know what can you do in your daily life, like how do you change your habits practically? Because we see that a lot of our customers say, okay, I know what's healthy, but it's very difficult to do because I'm really busy. I have this obstacle. I need to go to work. I need to rush. I have so many things on my mind. So we really help them, like, how can you put it into practice? So that's what we deliver, and we've seen first of all we've gotten amazing reviews on
Yeah,
Trust.
I sort of saw it. It's incredible.
People are very, very happy because they learn a lot, and it's a good reminder of things that are healthy, but they also get a personalized plan, so they really get an understanding of where their child stands, what to do next. They get support on how to do it. So a lot of our customers say that we connect the dots on all of these things. We don't just give kind of medical results. We don't just give like a fluffy consultation, but we really put together this journey that is very informative. And we've had a lot of our customers that told us, you know what, I've seen that my child's eczema got better or even went away, or my child's constipation got better or colic got better. So those are kind of the things that we have observed. Then we also have an offering that includes a consultation with a doctor trained in functional medicine and nutrition.
Okay.
That is more for children that have more symptoms, medical symptoms. So it's beyond well-being. It's more like they have a certain symptom like eczema, and they want to look at the root cause of disease. So the doctor can also help with, for example, an elimination diet. They can even make a certificate for that. Or they could help direct the person to other types of tests. And that's, for example, we see a lot of children have problems with growth.
Okay.
So growth, weight, eczema, for example, allergies. Some have autoimmune diseases, but that's more complicated. We don't focus a lot on that. It's more like gut symptoms as well.
Yeah.
They affect 50% of babies, and almost one third have constipation, recurring constipation.
Yeah.
So those are the symptoms we help most with.
And is it available where, because you're based in Sweden, I think. Where is it? Where can people, who can get it? Where?
So we've been available in all Europe, and from this week we're available in the UK as well. We
Oh,
haven't
great.
announced it yet.
Great. Look at that. Welcome, UK. You can get
Yes,
your gut microbiome screened.
exactly. We haven't announced it yet, but we got so many requests from the UK, from parents that reach out and they said we really want it in the UK. So from this week, it will be available in the UK as well. So all Europe, including UK.
That's awesome. And are you seeing any differences between the countries, or is it sort of like consistent? I know you said at the beginning, actually, there's just a lot of consistency in the first, 0 to 6 years of life. It doesn't matter where they're based. Is that being, are you seeing that on the ground?
The thing we look at are very conserved and consistent in different geographies. Actually, my co-founder, I mentioned he's a known professor in this area. He even published a paper showing that these kind of patterns matter everywhere, even in non-industrialized countries. So the thing we look at are very much very similar across different countries. But then, of course, there's a part of the microbiome that is it's more specific also to what you eat. And of course, that's different in different countries, but
Different.
focus on that core microbiome.
Let's switch it up now to talk about ultra processed food, which I've become obsessed about after reading this book. Have you read the book?
I haven't. I've seen it, but I haven't read it
It's
yet.
pretty, I mean, you obviously are in the field, so a lot of this stuff you'll be like, oh yeah, I knew that already. But it blew me away. Completely blew me away. And then when you start to look at the packets of things that you thought were probably okay, and it turns out they're not really okay, that was another eye-opener for me. I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, I think our children, but I've got three small kids, and you know, I like to think that we eat reasonably healthily, cook our own food and all that kind of stuff. But even that, when I was looking at the breakfast cereals or a few different things, I'm like, oh my gosh, we're killing these kids. What's going on? It's crazy.
Our food landscape has changed so much. And that's a bit the problem, right? We have normalized a lot of habits and a lot of foods that were not normal decades ago. So a lot of people also fall a bit into the trap of thinking, I'm eating very healthy because they're eating normal. They're eating what it's at the supermarket. That was also where I was some years ago. Of course, packaged food, like let's say we have converged to foods that are easy to store and have a lot of calories in little space and are
And
very
cheap
palatable. Yeah.
calories for cheap calories, just as in it doesn't cost like,
Exactly.
yeah.
I mean, in the end, capitalism brought us here, right? Whatever is cheap to produce, it can last a long time and is also palatable and people crave. That's what gets pushed at the supermarket because that's what makes most money.
What blew me away in this book, there's lots of stuff that blew me away actually, but one of the things that blew me away that I'd love to get your thoughts on is this idea that ultra processed food, in and of itself, the chemical makeup of it or the manner in which it's made, actually exacerbates obesity and other chronic diseases. Like it, but its very existence, however, irrespective of however much you eat, it somehow has some kind of trigger of these other conditions. That was crazy to me.
Yeah, definitely. It's crazy and it's all around us. And when you start thinking about it, it's really crazy to think about
Yeah,
it.
they had this story because talking about the first thing that you said when you were at the beginning of the show, there are three things that impact like day zero, if you like, of a kid's life. So vaginal versus cesarean birth, breastfeeding, or I can't remember what the third one was.
Antibiotics. Antibiotics.
Antibiotics, yeah. So there's this story in it around the Nestlé baby milk scandal in Africa. I don't know if you know that
Yes.
one. And I couldn't believe it, where I just couldn't believe that. So, I mean, there must be so many of these things that are happening all over the world all the time. So, like, how easy do you think it is, and how affordable do you think it is for people to cut ultra processed food versus a complete or an 80% non-ultra processed food, whatever's realistic, because there is, I think it's almost impossible to completely avoid
Yeah.
these days, to be honest.
That's right. That's right. Especially even if you're traveling, if you're on the go, I mean, to some extent we are exposed to that. I think it is easier in some parts of the world and it's harder in other parts of the world. I think you might be familiar with the concept of food deserts in the US,
Yeah.
even people that don't have access to like a proper supermarket, they only have convenience stores. So it depends on where you live. And unfortunately, this is very unequal, right? So
Yeah.
the opportunity to be free of processed food or reduce processed food also depends on where you live. So it depends on where you live. Sometimes it's more expensive.
Yeah, well, that's where I wanted to get into, right? Because there's all of this outcry about, quite rightly, about ultra processed food, but I haven't necessarily seen anything, to be fair, or maybe I haven't been looking. A POCDOC with cardiovascular disease and metabolic disease and renal disease that we focus on, one of the ways in which we're being used really extensively is to address something called health inequality. So obviously, those three diseases are much worse in certain communities and certain ethnic groups and certain areas of the country, trending across socioeconomic lines. And food diet obviously plays a big role in that. And I guess my concern is that, a little bit like you just said, you can tell people that they shouldn't do things, but if it costs them more without there being any kind of support or structure or anything at all, then that's going to not really go anywhere. And actually, it'll make health inequality worse.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's also why actually a lot of our recommendations are about removing products. So, for example, a lot of people use a lot of products to bathe their children and to say, use a lot of products. Our message a lot of times is you don't need those products at all. You can just cut them down. So, a lot of people actually told us, I ended up saving a bit or just cutting out things that I bought that I thought were, needed. And that's because we created the company without making money out of products. Our incentive is not to sell more stuff to people, but it is to do the best for their health. So actually, a lot of people cut down some products. Maybe they spend a bit more on vegetables, but net is not a big increase in what spending. And we also focus a lot on very, very practical tips on how can you make something healthy in 5 minutes? Because that's the other thing. It's not only the how expensive it is, but also how much time.
Especially with kids, right?
Exactly.
Like, I mean, yeah, you've got like minutes to get the food on the table before all
Yeah.
hell breaks loose, in my experience.
Exactly. Like we're very, very aware that we cannot ask people to cook three hours a day or even half an hour more. Really, we need to kind of what we try to do is that we try to understand their budget and their time budget, and we try to stay there. Like, what's the simple hacks you can do? For example, a very simple one. A lot of people give yogurt to their kids that sometimes sweetened with flavors. We say, why not going for a type that is without a sweetener, without the fruit? Maybe go for kefir that has a lot more bacteria. So simple swaps, same money, same time, but better results.
That makes sense. So I like to, and we like to, in the last few minutes of the show, talk a bit more about like your personal journey. So I know that like on the fundraising side, you guys have done amazing, which I think was a record-breaking pre-seed round for Europe, I think. So congrats on that one. But what kind of transitioning from, I guess, a very technical background? So, you know, was it biotechnology, molecular biology, pharmaceutical? What was the thing?
Engineering.
Pharmaceutical engineering into the startup landscape. Like, what have been your big learnings from that journey?
I learned so much. I made a lot of mistakes also, and I'm just learning every day. I think like what I always come back to is why am I doing this? I'm doing this because I suffered so much, and because I think that I can help future generations and perhaps have really prevent this condition and help people stay out of this condition. So I think that the why has helped me so much. I think when I started fundraising, especially with the amount we were looking for, so many people told me I had 0% probability of success. I heard that.
Zero. Let's not
0%.
even, no, let's not give anyone the benefit of the doubt. Let's peg it at zero.
0%. So a lot of people told me also, female founder, and I'm not from Sweden, and so many things. But I'm just reading the thing that is behind you, prove them wrong. It really happened in the end because I believed in that so much, and I really pitched to so many investors, and I tried to get better every time. So it's been a lot about resilience and about going back to why am I doing it and why I believe this is really a big thing.
Brilliant. Where do people go if they want to learn more about Alba?
So go to our Instagram, albahealth.co. We share a lot of research information about child health and nutrition. So if you want to learn more about this, then you can get a lot of free resources. You can we also have a podcast on Spotify, YouTube, Alba Child Health and Nutrition, and our website, albahealth.com.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Nora. That was fantastic. And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll be back again next week.
Thanks so much, Steve, and thanks for everyone for listening.
That's the motto. Throw back with no chaser, with no trouble. Popping that moe, baby, let's make some.